Hey, it's Jason from Mormon Expression Voices. Something I need to note before we play the interview I had with Elizabeth. When we recorded the interview, she had said that her Relief Society president had outed her to her friend's parents. After we finished recording, Elizabeth informed me that she had misspoke, and it was actually a mother of a friend who was in the Young Women's Leadership who did that. So I just wanted to note that for our listeners. And now our interview with Elizabeth Emery. Welcome to another episode of Mormon Expression Voices. I'm your host, Jason Merrill. In this episode, we'll hear Elizabeth's story in and out of Mormonism. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi, Jason.
Hello. Well, Elizabeth writes a blog called Liz Everything, and we'll hear more about that blog later in the interview. But Elizabeth, let's start out this interview by having you tell us how you're introduced to Mormonism.
Sure. So I actually was born and raised. My mother and her family have been in for several generations, and my father was a convert at 19. He was converted by a couple of missionaries, actually, and then served the mission himself.
Uh-huh.
So that was, yeah.
Okay. So you were baptized when you were 8 years old?
I was.
Okay. Good. And tell us about your experience growing up from your early days in the church as a youth.
Sure. So, I'm slightly embarrassed to admit it now, but I was the quintessential Mormon princess, right? So we have a huge Mormon family. I have 7 brothers. One is older than I am and 6 are younger than I am. And there are no twins. So my mom had 8 children in 12 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So we have the big Mormon family. We drove around, you know, the Mormon assault vehicle, that giant 15-year Econovan.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the church. I really did. I was in young women's leadership from the time I was 12 all the way up until I left shortly before my 18th birthday. And I served in, you know, multiple leadership functions, Beehives leader, My Maids leader, young women's, you name it. I was also very involved in the church choir. I knew all my scripture mastery by heart in seminary, you know. So I think as far as complete involvement, there wasn't much more that I could have done to be, totally involved within the church.
Right, right. So do you remember feeling a strong conviction and testimony growing up, or was it more about going along with your friends and your family member?
You know, I mean, I think it's probably a mix of both. I would imagine for most people it is. There was a period right before I left that I had gone 4 years without missing a day of scripture study. There was an element of the church. There are many elements of the church that I really, truly loved and had a strong testimony of. Mm-hmm. You know, and then there were things that I didn't have such a strong testimony of that I struggled with, my entire membership. And but I was also homeschooled, which is very common in Utah Mormonism.
Mm-hmm.
And so church for me also served as a social outlet, right? It was where I had my friends. It was where I was able to stand out and sort of make a name for myself as a leader in the community. And I was also very musically involved with the church, which was very important to me. And so I think it was a combination of both of those things.
Yeah. Okay. So it sounds like a pretty typical Mormon upbringing through high school. And then you left home at that point after high school?
I did.
Okay.
Yep. And so it was a very tumultuous time. There were a lot of things that happened, without divulging too much personal information that's not really relevant. My mother remained Mormon, very much so. And my parents actually divorced because my father left the church. And my mother, because there's this very much insider-outsider vision when you're inside Mormonism, had for many years convinced us that my father was just like this rabid ex-Mormon animal, you know. And so as we got older and began to understand that that was not the case and began to foster a relationship with my father, things really fell apart at home with my mom. And so, when she really found out that we were cultivating this relationship with my dad, things fell apart with her. She invited me to leave the home. I gladly obliged and was staying with a friend of mine when there were several things that happened that culminated in my loss of belief in the church. And it all happened over a very quick period of time. It was 2 or 3 months where everything happened all at once. And I can remember a very specific moment where I had the sudden realization that the church at least was not what I had believed that it was. But it was sort of a rapid transition over that time period. of when I was almost 18. I was just finishing high school and getting ready to go to BYU. I had been accepted to BYU, actually.
Hmm. Wow. So what do you remember about that time when your dad left the church? Do you remember what emotions you went through and what thoughts were in your head?
I do, actually. I was, you know, I was old enough to remember, but not probably old enough to understand. I was 12, and so my youngest brother was only, he was almost two. We were a fairly young family. And actually what happened was my dad was working out of town, and he was coming back on weekends for visits, and it gradually became apparent that he was, I mean, he stopped going to church. He was smoking cigarettes, even though he tried to, very hard to hide it from us. And when my mom decided, which was sort of this unilateral decision because their relationship anyway was not great, that he was no longer a member of the church, he left for town for the week for work. And she pulled all of us older children aside and said, "Your father has left the church. He's now a danger to us all. He's smoking. He's doing drugs. He's drinking. And we have to go. We're not safe here." Hmm. So without any further ado, we all piled in our 15-seater van and we drove. We lived in Kentucky at the time. He didn't tell my dad. We drove straight to Utah, where her family was. And it was very scary, right? Because my dad had changed from my dad and whatever his faults were. We loved him and he, you know, he was our father, to this really scary sort of enigmatic person that we didn't know anymore. And, you know, my mom worked very hard to alienate us from him simply on the basis of the fact that he wasn't Mormon. And, you know, whatever, then the divorce ensued. And, but yeah, it was very frightening and confusing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you're feeling, similar thoughts. You believe what your mom was saying and that your dad was a danger and it was scary. He was a scary person. Or do you remember feeling different about what your mom was saying about your father?
You know, we believed her, and looking back, I wish we had not, right? Because we missed out on a lot of really critical years of a relationship with my dad. He did not push us more than we were willing to have a relationship with him.
Mm-hmm.
And we were so wrapped up in this picture of him that my mom and her parents were very complicit in this, this image of who my dad was, that we, for several years, didn't really talk to him. You know, we saw him maybe twice a year when he came to visit. And my mom still was very like, we have to have people come with us so that if your dad does anything dangerous, we have a witness. I mean, she thought that my dad was going to kill us and her. It was very bizarre. It was very scary. And, you know, it really infringed upon our relationship with him for a long, long time.
And this was based on her perception of him, based on her belief?
Entirely. Yep.
Okay.
Entirely.
Wow. And so what happened from there? Your relationship with your family, your both parents?
Are you referring to after I sort of left the church or after we left my father?
After you left your father in Kentucky and moved mm-hmm. on.
Okay, so it was about 5 years before we really started talking to him again. And during the course of that time, I mean, Mormonism aside, we had a very tumultuous household. My mom at this point was a single mom, whether of her own making or no, you know, it was just her and us. And even though my dad paid child support regularly, we didn't have very much money. Of course, he always gave 10% to the church. And, you know, it was tough. So 17 rolls around and I went to public high school for the first time. The year before I started going to BYU. And I had taken this humanities class where I learned, and I did not know this, this was how sheltered I was. You know, when the Mormon Church General Conferences come out, they were like, now there's 13 billion or million of us, and now there's 14 million of us, now there's 14 and a half. And you know what I mean? Like, they give these very overblown numbers of how many of them there are.
Right.
You know, and at 15, 16, 17, I'm thinking like, right on, there's so many Mormons out there. And then I took this humanities class and my teacher was like, okay, so there's a billion Catholics and about a billion and a half Muslims. And I just remember at the time thinking like, holy shit, there's no way there's that many people of the, you know, I just, those numbers had never been real to me before in that way.
Yeah.
And, I began to think like, okay, well, if there's this many people who are, you know, living these other lives and are not Mormon, and I was exposed then to other high school students who were not Mormon, I was like, I know that the rest of the world can't be miserable. And yet you're taught to think that, right? Mm-hmm. So that was sort of like the first crack in the hole, so to speak, you know, where I was like, okay, well, maybe Mormonism's right for me, but it's not right for everyone.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if you're really truly believing Mormon, you know that it's the one and only truth. And everyone who's not Mormon doesn't really have the fullness of happiness. So that was the first crack, and it was all sort of downhill from there. And my brothers had gradually been falling away themselves. And so, you know, we had sort of a fractured home at that point in various ways. And as I was having these revelations about the church, they also began to feel as if this weren't true. And I further developed my relationship with my dad, and he was very welcoming of the fact that I was having these questions and encouraged my questioning without pushing it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's at least how that began.
Yeah.
Yes.
So do you remember some of the discussions you had with your father about the church and what those were about?
You know, he really let me come to him. I think he knew that if he pushed it too far, you know, being a member of the church for a long time, Mormons are very much encouraged to completely ignore anything that could even remotely be perceived as anti-Mormon. And he knew that. And so I think he knew that if he tried to come to me with, you know, well, did you know this? Well, did you know this? You know what I mean? It would have been much more of a turn off than what would have been helpful.
Yeah.
And there was one day that I called him, and at that time I was having same-sex attractions for another girl, and that was really what pushed me over the edge
mm-hmm.
of Mormonism and saying, you know, I love this girl, and yet my whole life, according to what I believed, now I am the drop. You know, I'm the worst of the worst. And I called my dad in tears and I said, I think I'm in love with this girl and everything I know has told me this cannot be right. And I think the church is not true. And he said, you're right.
Hmm.
Wow. You could stay in it. You could leave. You could be with the girl for the rest of your life. I don't care. But I just want you to know that you're right. And I support you.
Wow. And how did that feel when you heard your father say that?
It was, all of it was overwhelming, Jason. It was overwhelming, but just to know that in the midst of, as you leave the church, you lose everybody, with very little exception, that you go to church with. And, when I found out that this guy that I thought was, you know, this awful, horrible person was one of the very few people who were still telling me that I wasn't going straight to hell, you know, in so many words, was, it was overwhelming, but also very comforting and really laid a solid foundation for my understanding that there was happiness outside of Mormonism. Although it took me personally many years to come to feel that myself.
Yeah. And did you keep these things from your mother? You hadn't told her about the same-sex attraction you were experiencing?
So I didn't tell her. At that point, I wasn't living with her, but I was staying with a very good family friend, an older woman who had children of her own, that I knew very well. And I was very honest with her. I was open with her. I was living in her home. And at that point, I was so, like, wrapped up in the world of Mormonism and, like, honesty is the best and truthfulness is the way to go. You know, like, I had no idea the damage that I was causing myself by being completely honest with these people. So I told her everything, you know, that I was having doubts, which, of course, was very difficult for her. And then also that I was having feelings for this girl.
Yeah.
And she was freaked out. She was very scared. It came out later that she was having doubts of her own, which sort of explained her defensiveness. But she actually went and outed me to my own mother. So I haven't actually, none of my family has actually asked me any of this stuff. They've never asked why I left. They never asked why I ever actually dated a girl that, you know, it's never been talked about. So they have found out through other sources, pretty much everyone other than myself. But no, she and I have never fully discussed it to this point.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So it sounds like a pretty lonely place to be, I guess. Feeling doubts about the church and having same-sex attraction and not having family members you feel like you can go to other than your father to talk about it.
Yeah, it was tough. And I was young, you know?
Yeah.
I was 17 and it was incredibly lonely. I mean, everyone, I've been in this ward for 5 years, 6 years, right? And had served fairly faithfully. I mean, I went to church every Sunday, whatever. After I stopped going to church, there was, you know, I never went again. And not one single person, not one that I went to church with ever even called me to see if I was alive. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I mean, there's not anger anymore, but kind of surprise, you know, that there was so much loyalty and admiration and respect that I had worked on these relationships with these people, and it was wiped out completely in the space of, you know, a couple of weeks. I still have, I mean, you know, and then you get into, like, the bishop went and outed me to his kids, and then once, you know, the Relief Society president found out, she called the parents of all of my friends and told them to stay away from me. I mean, it got much nastier.
Wow.
That, yeah, but whatever, you know, I mean, it's over and done with, but, yeah, it was very lonely, and it was scary.
Wow. And where was your belief at this point? Was it kind of halfway in, or was it completely gone? Where were your beliefs when you're going through this whole experience and coming out and having same-sex attraction?
Sure, sure. I mean, it was one of those things where, interestingly, is that Mormons always, like, you know, warn you about that slippery slope. Like, you start in the slippery slope and you slide right down. And actually, for me, that turned out to be true, because I remember one day definitively, I had gone out to see a movie with this girl, and after the movie, and this was even before I had admitted any of this to myself, I completely unwittingly reached down to hold her hand, caught myself, didn't actually do it, but I knew that was what I had gone for. And when I got home, at that point I wasn't living with my mom anymore, I knelt down on my bed and I was like, God, if ever there was a time that I needed to know, I need to know right now. You mm-hmm. got to tell me, because if you don't tell me this is wrong, this feels right, and I'm going to go down this path, and if you're sending me to hell, then you have to stop me, right? And God, I prayed and I cried and I cried and I cried and I prayed some more, and it was completely silent. There was nothing there.
Were there any feelings of guilt associated with having same-sex attraction or acting on it?
Yeah, but it was almost like, I mean, I've always been like very self-confident, and so it was less guilt and more like, oh, so this is what this is. And yet, even though I've been taught this is wrong, like, I don't feel like I've suddenly become a bad person because of how I feel about this girl.
Yeah.
So there were some feelings of guilt, but I think they were more wrapped around, like, knowing that I should feel guilty, but not actually feeling guilty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and once I came to that realization of, like, it in this time, this God that I have been taught, like, you know, when they tell you, like, if you pray, you'll get the answer, and if you don't get the answer, you're not praying hard enough. Like, I couldn't have prayed harder. And that was when I knew. I was like, all right, okay. So whatever I thought the Mormon Church is, it's not that. Hmm. But I still believe in God. You know, I wanted to continue reading the Bible, but I swear to God, it was like after that moment, I tried for a little while. I was like, you know, I'll go to churches here and there. I'll try out other things. I didn't want to be an atheist because everything I'd heard about atheists were that they sucked up to that point, you know? And yet, everything I tried after that felt hollow. Like, I remember I tried praying in my car one night and I was like, God, if you're there. And I got like that far before I was like, fuck this. I'm talking to myself. Got up and got out, you know? And so no, I mean, it was like this, once I got there, my beliefs were completely unfounded because Mormonism wasn't true. And that was all I believed, you know?
Yeah. And was that accompanied by a simultaneous feeling of, this is how I am, I was made this way, or this is what I've become? I've become attracted to people of my same gender, but I wasn't always this way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, fair question, right? Because I had dated boys before then. My partner now is a boy. But at that point, because, I mean, I used to write essays about how bad it would be if same-sex marriage became legal. And this is when I was like 14, 15, right? Like, I didn't really know, but I felt so strongly against same-sex attraction without really knowing what it was. Mm. When I found myself confronted with the issues myself, it was such a duh, this wasn't a choice, that I didn't even question that. There was no way I could have chosen to feel that way about that girl, believing what I believed at that point.
Mm-hmm. So at this point, have you realized that, yes, this is who I am. I'm gay or bisexual. And you determined that that's who I am. And I've got to figure out a way to make this work and still be a member of the church.
No, there was never any, no, it was either I feel this way and I'm a shitty person who's going, you know, to never receive celestial kingdom blessings, or the Mormon Church isn't true. it was a total dichotomy for me. There was never any in between. And while sometimes I can understand how it is that people can sort of do both, I never could. And there was never a moment where I was like, maybe I confuse these. It was always either or, which is partially what made the decision to leave not easy, but clear.
And were you in Utah at this point, or had you moved to Chicago?
No, I was in Utah. I didn't move to Chicago until after I finished my college education, which I got at Utah State University.
Okay, that's my alma mater too. I went to Utah State.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah, so go Aggies.
Right.
Okay, so take us through your college years then, and what it was like having same-sex attraction and having doubts about the church.
Right. So by the time that I got to college, there was no doubt in my mind whatsoever that the church was not only untrue, but I had done a lot of research. I read Rough Stone Rolling. I read No Man Knows My History. I did a lot of research, and at that point, I was completely convinced that the church was total bullshit. And I was doing a lot of kicking against the pricks, right? Because I was angry, and I was angry that, you know, none of my former community was there. I was angry that my whole family didn't really want anything to do with me except my brothers and my dad. And I was kind of upset because I was, you know, set to go to the school that has great academics. And then suddenly it was like, okay, well, I can't go there. So where do I go? You know, so anyway, nothing against Utah State, but it was just really unplanned or whatever. So I went there, started out on a business scholarship, transferred to English, loved it, and really found more of my crowd in the English group. And I started writing for the school newspaper, the Utah Statesman, as you know. And I had a column called Listen Up, which I think you can still find the old columns. And I sort of did like this counterculture, you know, writing. And so when I look back and look at some of the articles that I wrote, many of the articles, my anger is abundantly clear. I was sort of intentionally, you know, pulling strings and poking people where I knew it would piss them off the most. Mm-hmm. And was really successful. It was the most popular column that the school has ever had. And that was cool, right? Because it was well read. I mean, the LDS church like threatened to pull the little Statesman, you know, paper holder out of their building because the stuff I was writing was so offensive to them. And I liked that.
What was offensive about it?
Well, you know, I would write things, let's see, like, what would I write about? I mean, so there were a lot of things. I mean, there were things that were not so offensive. I wrote a couple pieces on why we should, like, openly accept our gay college peers, right? Because there was a lot of discrimination. And then I wrote things about, like, how I wasn't such a fan of fraternities and sororities. And that stuff was, like, sort of incendiary, but not, like, awful. Mm-hmm. But then I wrote pieces about whether the Mormon church was a cult, according to the definition of a cult.
Oh.
And that, like, created...
Didn't go over well.
Management, right? Like, that was a really big deal.
Yeah.
And then I wrote a couple about, you know, the way that the Mormon church, like, the Mormons swear in Utah, and kind of how ridiculous that is, that there's all these adults walking around saying, flip this, and, you know, you're going to HE double 46. So I wrote about that. I wrote about how frustrated I was that the missionaries were proselyting on campus, and how, one, that's, you know, against school policies, and two, it's really sort of technically illegal, and how, like, aggravating it is as a non-Mormon to be constantly approached by the missionaries. You know, so I wrote about a lot of stuff that really angered a lot of people. And so I had this sort of, like, I don't want to say cult following, but it was very, like, black and white. There were people who loved me and people who hated my guts. Mm-hmm. And most of the school is Mormon. So most of the school hated my guts. Yeah. And, you know, that was sort of alienating. And on the one hand, like, I totally had it coming. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my friend group was pretty much limited to international students and, like, Mormon expatriates.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, so, you know, having gone to Utah State myself, I remember there was, it seemed like at the time I went there, I don't know if maybe it's changed, but there was about, I think the school was about 35% non-Mormon, the rest was Mormon, mm-hmm. and, which is pretty high for a Utah school. And I remember at the time, there was somewhat of a distinction between if you're Mormon or you're not. And I don't know if you identified at this point as a Mormon who was you know, the Mormon, but not active and not believing, or if you consider yourself an ex-Mormon or a non-Mormon or a post-Mormon.
No, before I even went to school, I had resigned from the church completely.
Oh, you had resigned before you even went. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. And how did it feel, I guess, being surrounded by so many other students who were Mormon? I know you talked a lot about the writings you did, but just in day-to-day life and people you interacted with, classes and things?
You know, I never personally, I mean, I would get a lot of hate mail. I got a lot of hate mail and threats and whatever. But in like personal day-to-day interaction, there was never, like, it was never bad, you know. And people, I mean, Mormons are notoriously nice. So there was never anything there that I dealt with. But, you know, in classes, like I took a philosophy of religion class and most of the class was Mormon. And I swear to God, rather that there was no interest in religious philosophy, none whatsoever. It was returned missionaries who all wanted to bear their testimony the entire time. And as a non-Mormon student who genuinely, like, genuinely gave a shit about religious philosophy, that was aggravating to no end.
Sure.
Because there was only so much class time that you can devote to, you know, bearing your testimony before you completely miss out on what the, you know, the professor is trying to say. And that was frustrating, you know. And there were a couple of intermediate English classes I took where I would write things, you know, about my experience or about anti-Mormonism, and a huge part of an English education is that your peers give you feedback on what's supposed to be the quality of your writing. And what ended up coming back was this ugly vitriol on, like, how could you say this about the church, and I'm so offended, and you're totally wrong. And that sucked. I mean, there's no getting around it. It did. It sucked. And, you know, so I got, I guess, experience, like, more in the classroom level, was just constantly reminded that everybody around me was Mormon and that the school kind of has to cater to Mormon interests, whether they like it or not, because USU was built on a government land grant from the Mormon church, you know? So there's only, I mean, what do? That's how it was.
Yeah, right. Okay. So overall, good experience, bad experience, Utah State?
You know, if I could go back and advise myself to not go to Utah State, I don't know if I would or not. Part of me says, get out, and you'll be happier. And another part of me says it was kind of a refiner's fire that made me super convicted in who I was. You know, I had to develop my writing. I developed a really tough skin. I knew by the time that I left that I believed everything that I said I believed. So, you know, in terms of what I wrote about. And so, yeah, I mean, on the one hand, it was not a good experience. And on the other hand, we get better through hardships, right?
Right.
So,
yeah.
Hard to say. It's sort of both.
And what about your family at this point? Bring us up to date on what your family was feeling about you, your mother, siblings, about you being, did they know that you'd resigned from the church? And
my siblings did. After my mom kicked me out, she and I have not really had a relationship since then. You know, we talk sporadically, but nothing in depth, and certainly never anything about the church. So what happened after I left was that my dad actually moved to Utah. At that point, he was living out of state. He moved to Utah. I lived with him. Two other brothers lived with him. And when my mother found out that my dad was living in Utah, she took my four youngest brothers and just sort of disappeared. And we didn't know where they were for several months. And they turned up in North Carolina. And over the next couple of years, she and my father had a really nasty custody battle. And her claims of him were based mostly on the fact that he wasn't Mormon, and she lost. So a couple of years after I started school, so I moved up to Logan. We were living in the suburbs of Salt Lake at the time. I moved up to Logan for school, and my dad, in an effort to keep, like, the remnants of the family together for as long as he could, moved up to Logan and bought a house up there. And so my brothers that were there with us, and I lived at my dad's house for some time, and then all the rest of us came over, you know, except my one older brother, and he went off and did his mission. He still kind of towed the party line. Mm-hmm. But the rest of us lived with my dad, and nobody except my one older brother is Mormon anymore. And none of us really have a relationship with my mom. So she still lives in North Carolina. Interestingly enough, she's an HIV researcher.
Huh.
She's always been a microbiologist. She's a very, very intelligent woman, scientist.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever, you know, she does what she does out there. Her parents and I and my brother still don't really talk. they have tried for a long time to sort of manipulate us via gifts. Like, you know, we all got together for this family reunion a couple of months ago, which was very uncomfortable. She, like, my grandmother very conspicuously handed out gifts to all of my brothers except for me. And so there's still that sort of weird manipulation, you know, like, we don't approve of you and we're going to make sure you know it. But at this point, it doesn't really matter. It's not important. And so that's sort of where we stand. I have a great relationship with all of my brothers, my older one too, who's now married and has a lovely, lovely little girl. And I'm very close with my dad.
Okay. So even your older brother, who's very active in the Mormon church, he still is accepting of you and your lifestyle and your decision about leaving the church?
Yep, he has been the entire time. You know, it's not something that we hash over in great length because we disagree so strongly.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we have a very good relationship. He's a good man, and he never lost sight of the things that are the most important, even though he loves the church and is active in it.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
It is. It's wonderful. I'm very blessed in that regard that I have maintained the most important members of my family, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm well aware of that. I'm very, very grateful for it.
Yeah, great. Okay, so you finished Utah State, and then what prompted your move to Chicago?
Just direly wanting to leave Utah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you leave the church and you're surrounded by Mormons on all sides, and you know what? It makes you kind of bitter. It made me kind of bitter. There's a lot of people who it doesn't make bitter, but I was, and I graduated in December of 2012, and I was so set on, I didn't have a job in Chicago. I sort of picked a random place on the map, didn't have a job. I had never been here. I didn't know anybody. And in like October, November, I sold all my furniture. I slept on my mattress on the floor because I knew that I had to make it so I had no option but to leave, because I knew it was going to be hard. No one was going with me. I was going by myself. And so I graduated December of 2012, spent the holidays with my family. My partner and I at the time broke up. You know, we had kind of known that that would be the case. He was going to medical school and I was going to Chicago. Mm-hmm. And on January 3rd, so it's been, you know, 2 years after a couple days ago, I threw my dog and everything that I could fit in my car and left everything behind, and I drove out. Mm-hmm. And I have been here ever since. It was the best decision I ever made. But you know, they tell you, like, wherever you are, you're there. And I was worried that, you know, leaving Utah, I would still have anger and bitterness. And, Jason, I am not, like, I have never been as happy as I have been since I have lived in Chicago. And part of that, I'm sure, is the time since I left the church. And part of it is the distance. And part of it is that I have not met another Mormon since I've been here. Mm-hmm. You know, so just a complete lack of exposure has really allowed me to find myself away from the church, and yet still write about it and be angry and express, you know, all of these feelings that I had anyway, in a really healthy environment for me.
Yeah. It's interesting. I live in North Carolina also, like your mother, and, it's been great for me. I left the church about 3.5 years ago, and I think I've been really, I hate to use the word blessed, but I feel like it's an advantage, I guess, to put it that way, to live here in North Carolina away from the Mormon corridor, and be able to experience being my own person, being someone who's not associated with Mormonism, and only getting involved with it as I choose to. And that's not really as possible when you're living in Utah and being surrounded by friends and neighbors and other students and people who are Mormon. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Agree.
Yeah. It's been good. So
it has been.
Okay. So you're in Chicago now, and you're working out there and dating and things, I assume, and things are going well, huh?
Yep. Yeah. I have a wonderful partner that I live with here, and still the same dog, Lois, which I blog about her pretty often. I mean, Chicago's great, and I'm very, very happy here, despite the frigid cold. It's been very, very cold.
Yeah.
Okay. I can deal with that.
And how much do you think about Mormonism these days and your, you know, the church, and how much does it hold your interest?
You know, it sort of ebbs and flows. There are times where I'm very much wrapped up in the church. So, like, for example, I recently discovered the LDS Church's release on Blacks on the Priesthood, which came out a year ago, and very intentionally they had it low profile. And I just found out about it, and I was raging for a couple of weeks after that. I wrote a post about it. It made me very angry. So there are times when I get very much sucked back in, and, I'm sure I will never completely leave as long as the Mormon Church is a thing, which, always will be in my lifetime. There's a part of me that continually wants to kind of vindicate myself and to say, look, I was right. I was right. And, I didn't do the wrong thing, even though I know that, it seems important in some part of me to continually be finding out what's going on in the church and what are they doing to pull the fleece over the eyes of their members now. And, I think that will probably always continue to happen. Mm-hmm. So, there's that. And then also I was just named managing editor of Atheist Alliance International's newsletter, their news team.
Oh.
And so, as I'm gearing up to really get started with that and revamp that, my own personal experience plays very importantly into the approach that I take there. Mm-hmm. And so, I have to sometimes take a step back from how I'm approaching many things and assess, how biased am I because of Mormonism and what I think that, about this, what I think about, what I approach Islam the same way as I would approach Mormonism, and really trying to, take my past and blend it in with the things that are interesting to me now. And so, like I said, it's an ebb and flow. It comes and goes. There are times when I'm very much wrapped up in it, and times where, I go for several days and I don't think about Joseph Smith at all.
Mm-hmm. When you were looking at those issues, going back to those days before you decided to leave the church, and when you were considering leaving, what were some of the issues that really, I guess, struck out at you and caught you as being real problems that you couldn't get past?
Sure. I would consider myself a fairly well-educated intellectual, not in the sense that I'm incredibly smart or whatever, but I like to think I try very hard to ask questions and to ask questions about the questions that I'm asking. And yet, even that, so there were always the regular issues, right? Race, the priesthood, polygamy, those things that are always sort of on the back, I think, of every Mormon's mind, whether they care to admit it or not. But there was also, despite any intellectual misgivings about the church, it was very much in my heart that the deepest questions lay. And those were the questions that were like, do I want to worship a God that really sends the people who aren't Mormon to a lesser form of exaltation? And these people included people that I loved, like my dad's sister, who's an incredible person, and who lives a life that I considered at the time I was Mormon as very, full of decadence and sin. She's a wine sales rep, She's lived a very normal, non-Mormon life, but for me it was like, how does this person that I love so much somehow, and who is so good, who has always been so good to me, not good enough,
Yeah.
And that in my heart always deeply troubled me. And it was, it was the same for my dad. And so I think that was really when I came to understand that I was attracted to women and I was in love with this girl, it was again in my heart that I knew that I wasn't a bad person, and that as much as I loved the church and wanted to believe it, there was nothing about Mormonism that could make me believe that the way that I felt about this girl was bad.
Yeah.
And so that was, those were really the driving forces. It was that I felt in my heart that it wasn't, that it couldn't be right. And then, once I sort of knew in my heart, all the things with my mind came crashing down, and it's been very much an intellectual progression after that, which is where the research comes in and the asking the questions and finding out as much as I can. So all of those things, it was, the race, the polygamy, the sexism, all of that, the homophobia, and then just the feeling that it just couldn't be right. It wasn't right.
Right. Yeah. Did you know much about the Proposition 8 efforts the church made in California?
Oh boy. Well, that happened right as I left.
Yeah.
Right as I was feeling this way about this woman. Yeah. And that was a huge driving force of how angry I was at the church. Yeah. I just could not believe that.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that really was a catalyst for me when I was having doubts was I have a really close friend that I was roommates with at Utah State who at the time had not come out, but later when I was married to my first wife, I'm remarried now to my second wife, but when I was married to my first wife, he had come out to us and told us that he was gay because he left the church about 6 years prior at that time. And I remember, you know, having a discussion with my ex-wife at the time about him and what that means for the church. And the thing I could not get past was how was it that it was through our discussion. We had a long hour and a half, 2 hour discussion with him about him and his feelings growing up about having same sex attraction and so on. And I really got the impression that, wow, Brad, he is this way. He did not make this choice to have same-sex attraction. He was born that way. And I couldn't get past this idea that God would design a soul, a child of his, to come to earth and have this quote-unquote, trial to have same-sex attraction and yet not have the same blessings that everyone else has the opportunity for, to be married, to have someone that they can partner with the rest of their lives, to have sexual relations with and intimacy and so on. And I asked my ex-wife, I said, where's the place in the church for Brad? There's not a place for him. He has to wait until he dies. And does God change him into a straight person? And what would that feel like? I mean, I can't imagine me being a straight person and dying and having God change me into a homosexual person. I couldn't imagine what that would be like. And I applied that to Brad. And that was really the catalyst for me to really think, this is probably just a man-made policy or idea that homosexuals don't have the same rights. And I wonder if you had the same sort of thoughts that went through your head about God and his designs for his children and how you had that sort of built-in same-sex attraction.
Yep. No, you couldn't. I mean, I couldn't have said it better than you just did.
No.
Just that. So I have to be alone forever because of this, Yeah. For as long as I'm down here on earth, I can never experience emotional or sexual intimacy with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like, there's no way. And then, after Prop 8 came out and the church had all this horrible, horrible PR, they have very much softened their statements since then, even to the point of revising a general conference talk, where they had to go back and correct. I think it was what Elder Boyd K. Packer said. There was one of the apostles said, you think that God had their children born this way? No, he would never give this trial to one of their children. It's a choice. And then they went back before the M sign was published and took that out, so they know.
Yeah.
And that further confirmed it, like you said, like, this is a man-made thing and it continues to change. It continues to evolve as they see that they're not getting away with this shit and it's looking bad. But yeah. No, I had the exact same feelings as you did.
Yeah, yeah. And it just showed me that, I don't think that there's the man behind the curtain is a man. it's not a divine, divinely directed church for that one issue alone. But also, I had a big problem with the blacks and the priesthood thing like you'd mentioned. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, and it was a long question to ask. I didn't mean this about to be about me, but I just really related to what you were saying there.
Right. No, I'm glad to hear it. That's very interesting. I mean, I don't think it ever gets old. No matter how bullshit you think the church is, no matter what, it never gets old to hear other people feel the same way. For me,
Yeah, I still feel like I need some validation as far as, it just feels good, I guess. I don't have any doubt necessarily that my decision to stay away from the church was the right one. And my decision or my feelings that the church is not what it claims to be. But it still feels good when you hear someone else have the same experience or the same feelings to kind of revalidate, that decision and stuff.
Right.
So, yeah. Okay. Good. You're living in Chicago now and how do you feel about spirituality and your outlook on life and the great beyond? And I know you said you're involved with the Atheist Newsletter, and tell us a little about that and your spirituality.
Right. I don't know that I would consider myself spiritual in the sense that many people do. I'm very happy, while also maintaining an acute awareness of the ways in which the world is not happy, which is a very interesting balance that I've had to learn to strike, right? And I'm sure that I'm not done learning. Fortunately, at this point in my life, there have not been any particularly great tragedies beyond, you know, divorce and leaving the church. And like none of my brothers have passed away and my parents are still alive. And so, you know, there's a part of me that's kind of curious to see how I react when that happens. Not to say that I have any expectation whatsoever that I'll ever become spiritual or religious again, but just that, you know, the great beyond is a question that I haven't really tackled yet with great, like it hasn't been tested. But I think, you know, to be candid, we are bodies on a little crumb of rock in the middle of this giant space, struggling to understand it and figure out what humanity is and all its beautiful and hideous parts. And what, you know, I don't know. I don't have the answers. I think when we die, we're dead. And that doesn't bring me sorrow. I mean, I'm sure like there's sorrow and death. There is. I personally won't care when I die. I won't be sad. I won't be around. I don't think that conscience is something that somehow transcends physicality. I have seen no argument to convince me that that's the case. Mm-hmm. It would have to be very convincing. I'm not really into anything metaphysical, but the things that I find like very deep satisfaction, you know, call me a simpleton, but you know, it's like Sunday mornings with coffee and fresh flowers and a good breakfast in my home. That makes me really, truly happy with the, you know, spending a holiday with my brothers, watching South Park, getting drunk, laughing our butts off. I mean, that like to me is the peak of humanity's goodness. And, you know, that's probably kind of self-centered. But you know, I also try to do, good things for the people around me, right? So I also find joy in like this Atheist Alliance International. I don't get paid. I volunteer. And that takes a lot of time and it will continue to do so. And that brings me great joy, you know? And so, you know, one of the biggest Mormon quotes is, God made men and men are that they may have joy. And I always believed that. I always loved that scripture. And I believe that if there is any redemptive quality in humanity, it's our ability to find joy in our existence and the idea that there isn't anything after we die, that there's no underlying motivation to be anything other than what we have right now. That, like, you know, not to be cliche, but to create a sort of heaven on earth brings me much more deep satisfaction than anything else does for me at this point. And that may change. I don't think it will. You know, we'll see. That's yet to be seen. I do know, I mean, there's no conceivable way that I could go back to any kind of religion. That will never happen. I can say that with surety. Mm.
And is that because just your feelings towards the Mormon church in general, or you've spent time looking at other religions and comparing that to your feelings about, you know, the existence of God and so forth? Or
yeah, all of the above. You know, I make no bones about the fact that I fucking hate the Mormon church, but I also know the Mormon church much more intimately than I know Catholicism or Islam or, you know, I don't like religion, period. However, I wouldn't consider myself militant atheist in the sense that I think that it's right to deprive people of their religion. I think the majority of religious people are really wonderful people, and there's really awful people who use religion as an excuse. There's a lot of really awful people who use many things as different excuses for bad behavior. So, you know, it's sort of just like a dislike of organized religion in general, and also just the fact that I don't believe in God. I see no convincing reason, and even in my heart, which I have searched, you know, fully, there's nothing that persuades me to believe that there is something metaphysically greater than us, like some sort of organizing force, some sort of, I don't believe that the universe loves us. You know, there's none of that. None of that speaks any kind of truth to me. And I don't see that changing.
Yeah. Okay. Before we close out the interview, there's two questions I'd like to go back to, actually three, but let me get to the first two. First one would be, you know, when you were making that transition, from a Mormon lifestyle into a non-Mormon lifestyle. You talked a little about the dating and, you know, holding hands with that woman in the movie theater. But other things like the word wisdom and other kind of things, can you talk about your feelings and experience in doing that and making that transition? And also my second question would be, you also, you know, at one time had a belief in God and an afterlife and so on. And tell us about that transition, if it was painful or what that feeling was like when you made, you created a different perspective on that.
I think those two, for me at least, are kind of intricately linked together. So the idea that I had of, you know, the Mormon celestial afterlife was like this blissful, I mean, it doesn't make sense, right? If you think about it, like, be with your family forever. Like, I don't like to be with certain members of my family forever. And there's nothing that any God could do to certain members in my family that would make us get along or that would make them good people or that, you know what I mean? So, So looking back, like the idea that I had of celestial kingdom doesn't really make sense. But you know, I sort of held it as this blissful thing. And when I lost that, you know, when I was going through the transition of, not believing anymore and falling away from Mormonism, it was like, you know, it was really a very close couple of weeks. It was, you know, that day that I knelt and prayed, I felt nothing. And after I felt nothing, it was like, okay, that's it. Like, that's my answer. There is no answer. And it was sort of like a stalwart march forward through, you know, like slogging through a lot of shit that I worked through, you know, over the course of the next year or so, and figuring out, okay, well, if I'm that Mormon, like, am I ethical? Am I spiritual? Am I moral? Am I all of these things? But it was like, once I left, I pretty much left. And there was a lot of fear, but there was also a lot of sort of blind bravery, which has to do with the piece of my character that I'm grateful that I have, that I have, you know, no control over. It wasn't like there was anything that I did that made me brave enough to do that, but I was, for whatever reason. And so it was just sort of like, okay, the Mormon Church isn't true. And now I must live the rest of my life. And that took some figuring out, and it was very hard, but I did it. And I never looked back. There wasn't ever a moment, not one, where I was like, maybe I should have stayed. I would have been better off if I'd stayed. Not even for a second. I never doubted it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't true. And it was like, okay, so here begins the rest of my life. Yeah. And that was it.
Well, it sounds like you're very happy and doing well. Any advice you'd have for listeners who maybe listen to this podcast as far as, you know, people who have same-sex attraction, who are struggling with their faith in the Mormon Church, or people who are having issues with family members who are very believing, and some of the conflicts that can result from leaving the church?
Sure. You know, that's interesting you ask that question, because as I round on the 2-year anniversary of being here in Chicago, I've been thinking lately, if I could go back to myself at 17, what would I tell myself? Because at this point, I'm my own worst nightmare when I, you know, when I was Mormon, with the exception of maybe being unmarried and pregnant, right? So what would I tell myself? What would I tell anybody who is in that situation? You know, as overused as it sounds, it gets better. The world is full of people, more than you can imagine, outside of Utah, who are not Mormon, who have never heard of Mormonism, who don't give a flying fuck about Mormonism, who are really good and really happy and really kind, and who will like you just the way you are and never even for a moment question the fact that maybe you want to smoke pot and maybe you want to have a girlfriend and maybe you don't really think that Joseph Smith was what the Mormon Church tells you he was, and that there's lots of room and lots of time to figure that out. And you know, and I guess along with it, that it does get better to be patient, because it takes time for it to get better. And you have to really get yourself out of a toxic position. And that means taking away, maybe for me, it was a whole place that was bad for me. It was leaving the state, but it was also leaving the people. And it was taking the time to surround myself with the people who genuinely cared about me. And it didn't matter whether I was Mormon or whether I was gay, you know. And if there's ever any doubt in your mind that there's maybe not more to life than Utah or Mormonism, I guess there is. There's so much more. There's so much more, and it's so much better. like it does, it gets better, and you can find true happiness outside of Mormonism. You can.
Great. Well, tell us about your blog.
Yeah. You know what? I am ashamed to say I am not as active on my blog as I would like to be. I have a really tough time drawing that line between personal life and professionalism on my blog, right? So I want to write about the topics that are exceedingly interesting to me along the topic of religion. And yet that's like really inextricably linked to my personal life, you know? And so I'm like dealing with a really sort of rough transition here where I would like to blog more about the things that are really important to me, and yet I'm not really sure how to tie my own personal views into that. So that's developing. However, I do have my blog. It's LizEverything.com. I post maybe once or twice a month. I'm trying to post more often. And I'm still dealing with a lot of Mormon topics. I come back to it more and more. And so I'm really trying to use it as a good resource, not only for me to reach out to Mormons who have also written about these things, but for other people to reach out to me to give my own personal take on things, both Mormon and otherwise. And so it's sort of, kind of a fun little exploration into everything that's going on in my life. And I would solemnly swear to post more, but I always think that I will and yet don't. So,
yeah.
But I'd like to think it's a fun read, and, you can check it out, see if you like it, Facebook it, Twitter it, whatever, feedback, criticism, great. If you hate it, let me know.
Well, great. Well, for our listeners, that's LizEverything.com. If you'd like to check out her blog. And Liz, thank you very much for interviewing with Mormon Expression Voices, and really glad to hear you're doing well.
Jason, thanks for having me.
Time.